Okay, welcome to this edition of My Car Guru. This is Lenny Lawson, the Car Guru, and I am proud to be in your presence this morning. I am not going to talk about the chip shortage today. I've talked about it enough. We got some more news, but I'm not even going to pass it on because guess what? It's the same news. No chips, closed plants, etc., etc. So we're just going to stay away from that today, and I'm going to go over some things I think will really help you out. Hopefully, you haven't been through some of these different scenarios that I'm going to talk about. You know, what you need sometimes is just a roadmap. You need a somebody to show you how to get out of a particular situation. I can think of a lot of times in my life when I could have used somebody, just tell me what to do. You know, just give me a tip, you know, set me off in the right direction, you know, just, or better yet, solve it for me. But unfortunately, sometimes it doesn't work that way. I got several phone calls and text messages over the weekend and on Monday about issues that people were having with regards to their automotive life. And I'm going to try to bring some light, shed some light into those situations. Hopefully that will benefit you. I do want to ask you a question. If you had the opportunity to drive a self-driving car, and let's say you rented it at the airport, you flew in someplace and they say, hey, you want to drive one of the self-driving cars? Would you be the person that said, yes, I'd like to try that? Or would you be the person that says, no, thank you. I'd rather have my hands on the steering wheel. Well, according to the Pew Research Center, I've always found that name interesting, certain groups of people are more interested in riding or driving. Well, I don't guess you drive a driverless vehicle, do you? Riding in a driverless vehicle, only 44% of U.S. adults say they would want to ride in a driverless car if given the opportunity. The men and women breakdown is interesting. 53% of the men say, yes, I would like to ride in a driverless vehicle. Only 35% of the women. Why is that? Are just women more cautious about technology and men more rambunctious as far as that is concerned? In the age group 18 to 49, 51% said they would like to ride in a driverless vehicle. 50 plus is only 35%. College graduates, 56%. Some college, 44, high school or less, 33. How do you explain that one? Urban dwellers, that's not us, that would be 52%. Suburban, that's kind of us, 40%. Rural, that's definitely me, that'd be 36%. So I would not want to drive in any kind of driverless vehicle or ride in one unless I was able to take over. You know, if I was sitting there and I'd still have to pay attention, right? I mean, so why have that? I don't understand what the appeal is. I do understand some of the advantages if they can perfect it, which they're saying that sometime in the next 50 years they will. I don't think I have to worry about that. But just think about the potential to reduce traffic accidents. You wouldn't need traffic lights if all the cars were autonomous because they would manage the intersections themselves. They would see cars come and stop, let other cars go. I mean, it would all be just like a coordinated ballet. At least that's what they're saying. And therefore, you could change the way cities are built, I think. That would be kind of interesting. Make them a little bit more human-friendly. As far as one of the biggest advantages is to be able to keep the elderly mobile or disabled people to where they could jump in a car and just go to the doctor or go to the grocery store, or, you know, not be limited by having to have hand controls or, you know, just not being able to see as good anymore or drive safely. You know, somebody that's in their, let's say, mid-80s or whatever, that's just really, they don't feel like they can hear or see good enough to drive. Well, now they could still get around. So I see a lot of advantages in that regard. Only 35% of Americans have heard a lot about the effort to develop driverless vehicles. I guess the other people just don't watch the news or don't read Car and Driver magazine or listen to me. 59% of the public says that they've heard just a very little to nothing at all. So that's kind of interesting. I don't think there's a huge groundswell of support for this. So when you think about impairment or distracted drivers, it was kind of interesting to read some of the comments of some of the respondents. Here, a 62-year-old man, he said that reason he would like to see this is because an autonomous vehicle, if properly programmed, has no ego. It does not feel road rage or impatience. Well, that's for sure. A 47-year-old woman said, drunk drivers, I want my children safe, and too many people in the USA get behind the wheel when over the limit, or too tired or distracted by phones. Really good logic, I think. A 65-year-old woman, I live in Florida, and traffic signs here seem to be a suggestion to most drivers. Many drivers here are bullies on the road. It's horrible. Perhaps having vehicles that are made to obey the laws will eliminate this trend towards using your car or truck as a lethal weapon. Amen. You know, one of the biggest problems I have with driving on the interstate is just the amount of truck traffic. And I know it's essential. I mean, how's my wife going to get her Amazon boxes? So, you know, you look at that and you think about just how congested they are. Now, one of the big pushes is to make trucks, freight trucks, autonomous and eventually eliminate the need for a driver at all. Now, that's going to put a world of hurt on a lot of employed people, that's for sure. But roughly 2/3 of Americans would feel unsafe sharing the road with an autonomous freight truck. I would be in that crowd. I think about what it could do for insurance rates if no cars would run into each other, if all of those accidents could be avoided. That's a wonderful thing to look forward to. It's going to happen. You know, it's just a question of how many people have to die before they get it perfected. Because, you know, I mean, you've seen some of the reports that I have on Teslas that, you know, that mistake a billboard sign for a truck or vice versa. You know, all kinds of things have happened where they run into bridge abutments. You know, they lose track of where they are. I have a self-driving feature in my F-150, but it is not very smart. It, you know, I'm supposed to keep my hands on the steering wheel at all times. So if I have to do that, why do I want the car to drive for me anyway? How is that supposed to be relaxing? To me, it makes me more nervous. But I've tried it several times. But what it does is that after about 2 or 3 minutes of driving, it does not recognize that my hands are still on the steering wheel, and it chastises me. And it says, please put hands back on the steering wheel. I said, they're on the steering wheel. I'll even sit there and squeeze it and, you know, move my hands around, and then it will immediately shut off. So obviously, the Ford Motor Company does not have that that level of technology perfected. So I don't know when that's going to happen. I wouldn't buy a car a lot of cars are going to have that on it. If it has certain other features, it's going to have that technology on it. So it doesn't mean you have to use it, though. So you can buy a Tesla right now with driverless technology. You can buy, I saw a GMC commercial, I think, on a GMC pickup truck where they are clapping their hands and they feel this sense of freedom because they don't have to touch the steering wheel. There aren't many vehicles that have full automation in that regard, and it's going to be a while, so don't get too concerned about it. Well, we'll take our first break and be back here in just a second. If you haven't found out by this point in your life that all warranties are not created equal, then I guess you've got some disappointment ahead of you, because they aren't. All companies that back the warranties are not consistent with the way they behave. You know, I have found that domestic automakers are much more lenient when it comes to doing repairs that are outside of the factory warranty, period, either time or miles. That import brands are much less lenient. Yeah, and there are certain examples, you know, if it's an internal engine problem, oil consumption problem, if it's an internal transmission problem, any kind of serious components that you are having issues with, you certainly better get those addressed before you roll out of your factory warranty or even get close to the end. You know, sometimes the repairs can take a while. It may take two or three trips just for them to figure out what's wrong with your vehicle, especially if it's an unusual type of complaint. So, you know, if you notice something, you need to address it quickly. And I want to go over some of the scenarios, especially if you buy a new vehicle and you take it into the service department. Don't ever let them just say, well, we drove it and didn't find anything, and you need to just go on your way. Always get a repair order. Always sign the repair order. You know, they may say, oh, yeah, we created a repair order, but, you know, they don't really want to just have these repair orders in their system that aren't, you know, that are zero labor. They void those out. So you don't want them to do that. You want a record that your car was in there, because the first thing that they're going to do, if you go in there, say, I've had my car in here three times, and he looks on his system, and he looks in there, and he says, oh, no, it shows that you've never been in here. It's because they never wrote a repair order, so make sure that you get one. If you have an issue and you've been in several times, go ahead and call customer assistance with the manufacturer, if it's Ford or Honda or Toyota or Hyundai or whatever. You've got to get on record with your complaint and always get a case number from them, and always, always be nice, okay? It pays off. Trust me. Be nice. They'll deal with you a lot better if, you know, they have some type of simpatico with you. Never use the word lawyer, because a lot of dealerships will just completely shut down because they've been instructed by their insurance company or by the management of the dealership that if anybody ever breathes the word lawyer, to stop talking and say, and just tell them that they'll have to go get their lawyer then, because you're done. You're done trying to help them. Isn't that crazy, though? I mean, if somebody gets that mad and is that frustrated that they think they need a lawyer, then somebody in the dealership has done something wrong. They just haven't gone far enough to help that customer. That's my philosophy anyway. So, you know, if you had to have a multiple repeat repair, you know, lemon laws don't apply to used cars that you buy. They only apply to new cars, and they only apply in the first 12 months or 12,000 miles. So keep that in mind. All right, some other customer nightmares. You traded cars. You signed the paperwork. You get a call a few days later that the deal was not approved, and they need you to come in and sign more paperwork. Folks, you didn't buy the car. They just loaned it to you until they could get it approved. It's called a spot delivery. And, you know, if I'm going to sign a contract, I'm going to ask them, is this transaction approved with a lender? And if they tell you yes, then you take copies of that contract. I've actually seen dealerships not have it approved. They get customers to sign a contract, and the customer doesn't get a copy of the contract. Listen, your leverage is your copy of that contract. And don't sign some kind of a bailment agreement or something like that, which states that if we can't get this vehicle approved, that you will have to work with us or bring the vehicle back. If you're signing one of those, that's where, you know, the finance manager has handed a bunch of paperwork over to you and say, sign here, sign here, sign here, and you're not paying attention or reading anything, well, one of those things may be an agreement that says that if they can't get you approved, that you will bring the vehicle back or pay additional down payment or whatever. I've seen some dealerships, they can't get somebody approved, and they keep trying and trying. It drags on for a week or two, and then they call the customer and say, well, we couldn't get you approved. What? You know, you've even been on a trip, and guess what else? They've sold your trade-in, and now you're between a rock and a hard place. Hey, if that ever happens to you, just call me. I am not a lawyer, but I can help you get out of that situation. I know exactly what to say to those dudes. Just don't tell them I told you. They might not talk to me anymore. Okay, so if you don't know that you've bought the car, that it's not approved, don't take the car off the lot. Just go home, you know, and think about it. There's no sin in that. You know, it's okay to delayed gratification is something that we all need to practice a little bit more of. Another customer nightmare, oil consumption problem on a brand new vehicle. Had a customer dealing with this right now on a Hyundai, and he's using 2 quarts every 1,000 miles. Does that sound normal on a brand new car? Well, if it was a Mazda RX-7, it might. You know, they used a little bit of oil. They would use a quart in 1,000 miles, but they were designed to, and you're supposed to tell the customer that that's the situation when they drove off in the car, and they understand that. But if you're driving a modern car today and it's using 2 quarts of oil in 1,000 miles, there's a bad internal engine problem. Well, this one dealership had had them come back 3 separate times. They said that the policy was that they come back 3 times, top the oil off, and measure it each time. And each time they lost 2 quarts in 1,000 miles. They're on their 3rd time. Now they're telling the customer that they have to bring it in and do some type of a valve train cleaning. Now, I've never heard of that, but this guy that listens to the radio show called me, and he said, have you ever heard of that? And I said, no. I said, let me give you a suggestion. Don't go to that dealer anymore. Go to this dealer. He did. They told him a completely different scenario that's much more user-friendly, including they're going to give him a loaner car. Folks, sometimes you just have to go someplace else, and that's just the way it goes. Another issue that comes up is unfulfilled promises by a salesperson. Never leave a dealership after buying a car with them owing you something like floor mats, like a trailer hitch, a spray-in bed liner, something like that, without getting a document that says that on it. We call them a we owe in the car business. We owe this customer this, or an IOU. It's the same thing. If you have that piece of paper, it's kind of like the repair order. If you have that piece of paper, then you've got something that you can go in. You know, that salesperson might get fired. That happens. There's a lot of turnover in the car business, and you may go in a month later, where's my floor mats? What floor mats? We don't have any floor mats ordered for you. And then, you know, they go to DEFCON 7. You may not know what that is. I don't think there is a DEFCON 7. That's when the country is falling apart and we're being attacked. So anyway, that's just a comparison. Let's see. You can't get your new tags for your new car. The dealer keeps putting you off, and you go in to get tags, and they don't have the tags yet. Don't let that go on for more than, you know, maybe 20 days, something like that. You know, sometimes when you buy a used car, it'll have a payoff on it, and the dealership has to pay that car off. And sometimes the lenders will hold the checks for 10 days and then send the title out, and you got a transportation time and all that stuff. So, you know, 20, 25 days at the max. If you have to go in and get an extra drive-out tag for another 30 days, I would want to talk to, like, the general manager or the general sales manager. I don't want to talk to my salesperson anymore. He doesn't know squat, okay? And the finance manager doesn't either. Once they blow them out of the finance office, they're done with them. It's the title clerk. And, you know, the title clerk is just trying to do her job. And sometimes it doesn't hurt to have the general manager get involved and make a phone call or to check with somebody. You know, before you blast them on the CSI survey, you might want to just give them an opportunity to solve the problem. And it may not be their fault at all, but, you know, it's just something that you need to think about. We'll take our last break and be back here in just a second. Okay, another scenario for you. You know, occasionally we all get a little bit disorganized, and we thought we put something where it was supposed to go, you know, in the file cabinet, but it didn't make it there, or it's not there when we looked, and maybe the dog ate it like he did our homework. It's your title. You've lost the title to your car. Is it an emergency? No, but you need to get another one. So what do? Well, you go down to the DMV or to the tag office and you say, hey, I lost my title and I need another one. Now, if you had a lien holder on your title, then it's very possible that that title will be sent to the lien holder from the state of Tennessee instead of back to you. Well, why? Because you don't owe any more money on it. Well, the tag in the state of Tennessee, they don't know that. And so you need to take to the courthouse with you or the tag office something that shows that you paid off your loan. It could be your canceled note. You should have that. But if you don't have that, then call the bank and tell them that you need an official lien release document that proves that your lien was released on that car. Then go back to the tag office and say, I need a new title, and here's my official lien release. And then they will send that title to your house instead of your banker friend. But if you don't have a lien on it, and you never did, then it's not an issue. You just go down and get a new title. If you have, I had a situation where I went to get a new title, and I had the title to the car, but I had never paid sales tax on it, so I needed to pay sales tax to get it registered my name. It came back as that it was stolen, and so then I had to have an investigation done through the state. It took an extra 5 or 6 days to get it done, but eventually he said, no, this vehicle wasn't stolen. It was a four-wheeler with a very similar VIN number. It was an older car, so it had a very short VIN number, and they confused my 57 Volkswagen Beetle with a four-wheeler somebody had, which was stolen. These kind of situations will come up occasionally. Do not panic. Just be nice to the people at the tag office. You know, sometimes I want to speak to the second in command or the county court clerk. Most of those people are very nice people, and they'll talk to you if you go to them and explain to them what's going on, and they'll be very helpful. Again, you know, I'm not lecturing. I guess I am lecturing a little bit. I think you get more with sugar, and sometimes you just being nice and helpful and positive and stuff like that. Those people get chewed out a lot. And when they run into a nice person, they want to do everything to take care of them. So just be nice. Okay, so this is Lenny Lawson, the Car Guru. If I can ever help you with anything, don't hesitate to call 423-552-2020. If I don't answer, just send me a text. That's probably better. Just send me a text. I'll get back to you, I promise. Well, thanks for listening, and we'll see you tomorrow.